Peter Lumsdaine works for the Resource Center for Nonviolence and has been active in researching and opposing the expansion and domination of the U.S. government for many years. He was imprisoned for 1.5 years for damaging a Navistar satellite in the early 1990s. In the following interview with Freak Radio's John Malkin, Peter describes the way in which the U.S. government uses its military arm to expand its economic and political authority and how crucial it is to stop the U.S. Space Command from continuing the strategy of destroying democratic movements from space.
I think the bottom line of this is that any country in the world knows, any small country in particular, knows if they attack the United States, and really the large countries know this too, if they attack the United States, they are going to be pulverized in response. The United States has a very powerful global so-called conventional and nuclear capability, which would be brought to bear on these countries, even in a much more devastating way than Operation Desert Storm in 1991. So, you know, it is that that threat of devastating retaliation, I think, that really keeps any of those attacks from occurring, even assuming that these countries would want to attack the United States, which, you know, maybe some of them would or some of them wouldn't. But the fact is, it would be suicide to do so. You know, people also point out the fact that when they're so concerned about one or two missiles getting lobbed over here, as the old joke goes, if anyone really wanted to get a nuclear weapon into a U.S. city, all they have to do is stick in the middle of a bale of marijuana, and, you know, and it goes over the border, and boom. So, you know, the thing is that this is not really addressed towards the lone nut, you know, isolated person who might try to smuggle or get one bomb into the country. This is addressed at national military forces, and like I say, it would be total suicide. Now, so why are they building this thing? A lot of good contracts for Lockheed Martin, what have you? Well, yeah, to some extent, but the thing is that this really fits in to the other work that Vandenberg does. I was just talking with a guy from the Lompoc Record, the local paper there, about this afternoon on the phone, and the United States more and more has shifted its nuclear forces from the idea of retaliation if we're attacked to the idea of what they call preemptive counterforce or first strike. That, in other words, if we get in some kind of confrontation or crisis in the Middle East or East Asia or whatever, we can credibly threaten to launch a nuclear first strike. How can we do that? Well, the only way that we can do that is to overcome any retaliation that would come back to us. See, this was the standoff for many years between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, or the U.S. and Russia. Neither side would attack because the other side would be pulverized by the retaliation. But with a first strike strategy or preemptive counterforce strategy, the idea is that your missiles become so fast and so accurate that you can actually preempt the other side, decapitate their command structure, and crater out the underground reinforced silos that hold their retaliatory forces. Okay, so this has been the whole push of U.S. strategic policy for 15 years, the Trident missile system, especially the Trident II, the Navistar targeting satellites, the MX missile, the intercontinental strategic cruise missiles, the B-2 bomber, all of this kind of stuff. And the United States has really achieved a very large degree of that, but there is one hole in it, and that is, suppose we miss with all these super high accuracy reliability, Trident II and MX and Minuteman III advanced guide, suppose we miss a few silos, and somehow they fire off a remnant of retaliation. Well, it might be only 1% of their arsenal, but that could still devastate city after city in the United States. So the theory is that you have a missile defense system to catch the remainder. And this was talked about in U.S. government documents back in the 1980s. There's an engineer who worked for 16 years at Lockheed named Robert Aldridge, who wrote a couple books about this in the 70s and the 80s. And so beyond all of that technical analysis, I think the simplest way to envision it is this, and I really have to take my hat off, credit where credit is due, to, that's right, Richard Milhouse Nixon really said it best. And he said, when they were toying around with this idea some years ago, imagine two gladiators in an arena with long, sharp spears. They're circling, they're both trained fighters. Neither one can really find an opening because they're both kept at spear point. Suddenly you introduce a shield, you give one of them a shield, an iron shield, and the balance is tipped, and that gladiator with the shield and the spear can now go on the attack. Well, the spear, of course, is the U.S. offensive capability, particularly our first strike nuclear arsenal, Trident II, MX, Minuteman III, and so on. the shield they're trying to introduce is this NMD system. Basically, they're saying that we can attack, we can launch a conventional, so-called, remember Desert Storm was a conventional war, conventional or thermonuclear attack on any country in the world without fear of retaliation. That's their ultimate goal. So they also call it escalation dominance. There's a lot of terms for it. But basically, that you have the Trump card, that you can threaten to go nuclear and actually win at that level of warfare.
I'm speaking with Peter Lumpstein. He's with the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and he's talking about the upcoming October 7th Worldwide Day of Resistance, which will include nonviolent civil resistance at Vandenberg Air Force Base here in California. You mentioned earlier surveillance and other components of the U.S. Space Command. Can you describe in more detail what kind of activities are going on right now with this equipment, and what is floating around in space already that has been put up there for military purposes?
Right. Well, actually, military satellites have been a major factor in U.S. Capability to wage war in recent years and recent decades, but there was a kind of a turning point that was reached, and this is around the time that the U.S. Space Command was being set up in the lead-up to the Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm. Actually, that was the first time in which military satellites were used on a very extensive basis, so much so that Aviation Week and Space Technology magazine, which is kind of the industry journal of the aerospace industry, and they focus a lot, they focus on civilian aerospace, but a lot on military too. And I remember 1991, in looking back on the Gulf conflict, they went so far as to call Operation Desert Storm the first true space war. Well, now we usually think of space war as like, you know, little folks with lasers zapping each other's, you know, orbiting rock. No, this, what we're talking about, and I think this is very critical to understand, is the Space Command's basic vision is war on the Earth waged from space, that guides the weapons to their targets, that identifies the targets, that tracks down enemy forces, the insurgent forces, those people who are challenging the current world order. there is a lot of surveillance, KH-11s, Big Birds, different lacrosse, infrared imaging satellites, satellites that can you know, pick up images through cloud covers, even to a certain degree through buildings, thermal sensing stuff. Leonard Weinglass, some people may have heard of, in the context of the Mumia Abu-Jamal case. He's the lead attorney for Mumia Abu-Jamal in recent years. Anyway, Len Weinglass told me once in the early 1990s that when he had been working on the case of some of his clients, I believe Puerto Rican nationalists, who were living in New York at the time, and they found out through leaked documents or freedom of information, something they'd pried out of the government, that in fact that the government had repositioned surveillance satellites over the places where these people lived and worked to gather that kind of detail. Now, they were talking about a domestic court case, domestic dissidents or radicals, and the government is repositioning satellites over their home areas in the United States to pick up that kind of intensive track and surveillance. Guidance systems, for instance, like Navstar, GPS. I mean, you walk into a hiking store, it's like, oh, wow, I've got my GPS unit. But in fact, this is used to a much greater effect and impact by police forces, by parole forces, by the Border Patrol, the INS, La Migra is making extensive use of GPS along the border. And in situations, for instance, like southern Mexico, in situations like Peru, Indonesia, Turkey, Colombia, where you've got police and military units fighting these very ruthless counterinsurgency operations, counterinsurgency war, often with U.S. equipment, U.S. Firearms, U.S. Helicopters, U.S. advisors, U.S. trainers, and U.S. satellite intelligence data. I just want to quote from a letter that came out on September 4th. It was sent to Sam Farr, actually, who, of course, accompanied Bill Clinton to Colombia, to Cartagena, to deliver officially the beginning of this new aid package there to the Colombian army, a country where 30,000 people have been murdered in the last decade, and according to Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, some 80 to 90% of those by the military and paramilitary death squads that are affiliated with the Colombian Armed Forces. that we're now supplying at greater and greater levels. Actually, we've been supplying for a long time, but it's sharply escalating. So there was a letter on September 4th that was sent to Sam Farr, deep concern by 25 professors, Bay Area, Monterey Bay Area academics from Monterey Institute for International Studies, CSUMB, Cabrillo UCSC, and so forth, historians, Latin America specialists, and they talked about this disaster that the United States is accelerating into in Colombia. But I just wanted to read this one quote. They talk about this aid package, $1.3 billion aid package, and says, quote, clearly the plan in Colombia, clearly the plan is for an accelerated, technologically sophisticated, quote, low-intensity, unquote, air war carried out primarily with American battle helicopters, satellite surveillance, and cluster bombs, unquote. So that was a from a letter that was signed by 25 professors of history and political science and Latin American studies in the Monterey Bay Area to Sam Farr this September. And I think that that is an indicator of the kind of application that this satellite weapons guidance and surveillance is being put to.
That's all for the Weekly Freak Show this week. Thank you for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of 96.3 FM Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California. If you have comments or criticisms for this program, please send email to frsc@microradio.net. That's frsc@microradio.net. And don't forget, you can listen to the many fine programs on Freak Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on the internet by visiting our webpage at www.microradio.net/frsc. Theme music was written and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. Portions of this broadcast were produced with assistance from Old Lady Scar Arms. For John Malkin, Max Boykoff, and everyone at Freak Radio, I'm the V-Man, and that's a wrap.